In August 2022, a weekend altercation at a bar in Montana escalated into the death of 28-year-old Whisper Sellers. While this case is still ongoing, with multiple conflicting witness testimonies and a self-defense plea, Whisper's family is worried that she may not get the justice she deserves. This is the story of Whisper Sellers.
Hey guys, this is Ash.
This is Shiashi.
This is Maggie, and you're listening to We Are Resilient. I'm trying really hard to mask my sick voice.
You don't sound that sick.
Well, that's good.
My voice is a little rough from the weekend from the Cracker Bowl.
I thought you were going to say the Waka Flocka concert.
No, I skipped out on the Waka Flocka. I wonder how the turnout was. Do you guys know?
I haven't seen anything.
And there was a lot of people there.
Oh, was there?
From like the post that I seen. Yeah, like it was, that place was packed.
I mean, tickets are only $35. So, I mean.
Yeah, I think they sold like 1,000.
Wow. Good for them.
That's crazy. Maybe they'll start doing more concerts. But I was surprised. Apparently, there was a lot of controversy. It sounds like it went really well. It didn't sound like there was too much trouble or anything like that. So,
yeah. And it seemed like people enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, small town people just have a hard time accepting, like, you know, new and different things. So I'm glad it turned out well and didn't turn into something that people thought it would be.
So tell us about the Cracker Bowl, Mac. Maggie.
Well, I don't know anything about it.
Tell us about the Cracker Bowl, Shiashi.
The Cracker Bowl was so much fun. I was so nervous because my little baby was nervous. He was quiet all morning. Yeah, he was like, I'm just nervous. What if we lose? And I'm like, you know, win or lose, as long as you're out there and you try your best and you have fun, that's all that matters. It was really cool because before they got sent off, the chief came out and gave them little goodie bags. And then the vice chief sponsored a charter bus. And they got a little police escort through town. It was really cute.
That's so cute. I'm glad they make them feel special like that.
Yeah. And then the game was really good. And up until halftime, it was tied. And then right at the end, you know, the boys did their thing and it was 36-14.
That's an awesome experience. My little boy played. I think he played in 3 or 4 Cracker Bowls. They made it every year. And yeah, we would do the same thing. I made we got little fat heads made for them and had little pep rallies for them. But Carter was the same way. He would not speak and he would just be so nervous. And I was like, it's just a football game. You're going to play hundreds more in your lifetime. Just go out there and have fun and do your best. Because they shouldn't stress about a game at that age, you know?
Before they loaded on the bus, the coaches were like, guys, remember to have fun. Go out there and have fun. That's all they kept like saying to them. And I was like, isn't that what it's supposed to be about when you're 6 and 7 years old? Like, just have fun.
Well, I hate when they make sports so like critical at a young age. Like, kids don't need to feel that anxiety. Like, if they lose, you know, yeah, you can do better, but don't make it seem like life or death.
Yeah, there's no NFL recruiters here for the Pee Wee.
No, I think 6 is a little too young.
Yeah, here's my thing, because I coach, and I've coached at all ages, 18 and under. The most important thing at this age when they're young is just developing a love for the game, having fun doing it, having fun with your friends, and then just building those foundational, fundamental skills. Like, that's the purpose of youth sports. Parents put too much stress on sports sometimes, and I'm guilty of that as well, but their future coaches will appreciate the push for the love of the game and just fundamental skills.
And what people don't realize is this is the age where a kid can either love or hate a sport too. So if you have a bad coach that, you know, makes it all about winning, then that can just ruin it for a kid too. So it's good to hear that they were like just promoting like the positive experience of it.
Well, Ash, you have good news from this past weekend.
Yeah, my cross country boys team, I coach the varsity Cherokee Braves. They defended their regional championship and they won again yesterday. So they're back-to-back conference champs as well as regional champs.
Yay.
And we'll be going to state again next week. I had 2 girls that qualified. One was the regional runner. She was the champion. Mm-hmm. And then we had another girl who placed high enough to qualify for state. So
your regional champion runner, she's, I mean, 30 seconds above the next, you know, the next runner. So that is great. She sounds like she has great odds at state.
Yeah, she works really hard. Super proud of her.
So Maggie, this weekend you were feeling a little under the weather.
Correct, which you can probably hear. My little baby was sick and he gave me his germs. So we've been sick for about 2 weeks now, but it's just that time of year.
Well, I hope you're feeling better for tomorrow, because tomorrow is our first ever live show. Yay! It's actually our 1 year anniversary, which is wild that we've been doing this for a year already.
Round of applause, graphic or sound. And right here.
I can clap and yay. Well, you didn't hear me clapping. That didn't make no noise. So tomorrow's our first live show. We're actually going to be doing a podcast episode in front of people, which I am low-key terrified, but I'm going to go in there like a boss and try not to sweat all over the place. How are you guys feeling about our first ever live show? Isn't it crazy that we're to this point from when we started and now we're doing like a live show a year later?
I still feel like we're just talking to ourselves. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Just talking to the void out there.
Yeah. So it's like hard to, I guess it's hard for me to like actually visualize what that will be like. I'm not so much nervous as much as I am just, it's going to be interesting.
I'm excited, a little bit nervous, but I think we'll do good. We've done this long enough and I'm just excited people want to come see us. Like, you want to come see me? You know about me?
We're going to go see Chicken Tender Osh. That's going to be how you're going to sign stuff. But yeah, it's just wild, you know, and we're going to talk a lot about it tomorrow on our recording, but it's just wild to think that we've been at this for a year. And, you know, we had just had like a small goal to just raise awareness and just to see kind of the impact and what we've done and the interviews and just pushing the movement out there. Like, we've done a lot. I'm proud of us.
Today, I was actually, you know, Googling stuff just to kind of finalize my story. And it was really cool because when I Googled MMIW case and like put something behind it, I don't remember what I wrote, but I put something behind it. And the first thing that popped up was us and the news article that Derek Dillinger did for the Charlotte news station. So I thought that was really awesome. So like simple MMIW searches pop up our name.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Today's story comes from a town called Martin City, Montana, which is near the Blackfeet Indian Reservation.
I haven't heard of that city before.
I don't know exactly where Martin City is. Blackfeet Indian Reservation is a very large tribe. Mm-hmm. So it's located in northwest Montana, and it borders Glacier National Park to the west and Canada to the north. But it actually spans over 1.5 million acres. So it's one of the largest tribes in the United States.
And let me guess, they only have like three cops or three officers or something crazy like that. I didn't look into that
specifically, but I'm sure it's low. So we have covered a few cases from the Blackfeet tribe. One was Arden Pepion and the other was Misty Upham. They were both members of the Blackfeet tribe. So something just about the tribe is that horses and buffalo were very important to this tribe historically, as one of their main sources of food was buffalo, and they used their hide for clothing, teepee covers, and other various purposes. And I did put in here that the Blackfeet people historically lived in teepees and the men of the tribe did wear headdresses. And I wanted to point that out because there's always this misconception that all Native Americans lived in teepees and wore headdresses. But we as Cherokee people know that that's not the case.
I mean, headdresses are a big part of cultural appropriation. People just throw them things on left and right. Don't wear a headdress. Don't dress up like an Indian for Halloween. If you did, stop. That's my PSA for the day.
Yeah, because you'd look like a fool. I'm just kidding.
Let's not start today with violence.
Just don't do it. There's a lot of misconception when people come here thinking that they're going to see like teepees and things like that when the Cherokee didn't live in teepees. So
it's always bizarre
to me too that people come to town are like, where are the Indians? Like, we're right here. We live in houses.
I'm right beside you.
Yeah.
In the grocery store.
So confused.
When I was in college, you know, we had people who knew that we were Cherokee. They found out we were Cherokee and they were like, do y'all have power? Are you allowed to have phones? And we're like, girl.
What?
Yes.
But you know, I do get it
because you remember we covered a few cases, specifically a Navajo case where they did live in like a really desolate area and they didn't have power and they had like dirt floors. So I get it to an extent, but at the same time, it's like, you know, some tribes aren't like that anymore.
Well, I think part of that is that just common misconception that people just tend to blend all tribes and indigenous people into this one pot and not realize that there's so many different tribes and cultures and traditions and languages, and we're not all the same.
Very true. What's cool about the Blackfeet tribe is they actually had their own language, but they also used sign language, which I thought was pretty cool.
Sign language or sun language?
Sign language.
Oh, like?
Like hand signs. I don't think it's like American sign language. I think it was still a part of their own language. Yeah.
That is really cool. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get back to the story. So the headline of an AP news article reads, "Shooting at Montana bar leaves woman dead, husband wounded. Authorities say a man shot two people, killing a woman and seriously injuring her husband during an altercation at a bar in northwest Montana near Glacier National Park. The victim of this fatal shooting was Whisper Dawn Marie Sellers, a Blackfeet tribal member who was only 28 years old. Whisper was married and had five children. The children were aged 12, 9, a pair of six-year-old twins, and their baby was only 4 years old.
Oh my gosh, she had a handful.
Whisper was the baby's sister of her siblings and was described as a devoted wife and loving mother to all of her children. At 1 a.m. on Sunday, August 29th, 2022, the Flathead County Sheriff's Office responded to a reported shooting at the South Fork Saloon. When authorities arrived on scene, they found an unresponsive female victim, Whisper, and a critically wounded male victim, Whisper's husband, Douglas Crosswhite, and were informed that the suspect had fled the scene. According to witnesses, the couple reportedly got into a verbal altercation with the suspect, Dell Crawford. Whisper and another woman at the bar were confronted by the suspect after he found them taking selfies in the golf cart that he had driven to the bar. According to witnesses, this interaction turned violent when Crawford accused the two women of taking his golf cart keys. It was reported that in this altercation, Dell Crawford pushed Whisper, to which her husband, Doug, pushed the suspect back, who fell to the ground. Once Crawford got up, he pulled his handgun from his waist belt and immediately started shooting at the pair.
Oh my God.
Gosh.
Whisper was shot in the chest and died at the scene. Doug Crosswhite suffered from two gunshot wounds, one to his chest and one to his arm. He was life-flighted to a local hospital where he received treatment.
So stuff can be resolved by like simple communication. I don't understand how something could escalate to that level. He could have just said, "Hey, please don't take pictures of my golf cart."
I don't understand how stuff with guns escalate so quickly. Like, I get that if you were fearful for your life, like if they threatened a gun first, you know, like maybe then it could be warranted, but not just because someone pushed you down because you pushed her first. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Then you just get up and start shooting. Like, it's just, it's cowardly.
Yeah, for sure.
Get in your golf cart and go home. You got a problem.
But we know that alcohol was likely involved.
Mm-hmm.
So Dell Crawford fled the scene before officers could arrive, but later was found only a short distance up the road from the bar. Crawford claimed that his actions were a result of self-defense in the incident, but also told deputies that he hid the gun and it was in a safe place and the officers would not find it.
So if it's self-defense, why did you flee and hide the gun?
Good question.
Was he an enrolled member too?
No.
He's white. Whisper's family describes the event as a senseless tragedy committed by a stranger just days before her 29th birthday. The testimonial on Facebook reads, "During the early hours of August 27th, Whisper was shot and killed by an older white male whom she did not know. In the parking lot of a Martin City bar, this man did not want to see Whisper as the fun and outgoing woman enjoying her night and felt the need to be rude and argue with Whisper, to the point of getting physical with her. This older male pushed Whisper and the people she was with. Whisper and her husband were both shot as they tried to run away from him. After committing this horrific crime, the murderer simply fled the scene and tried to hide his gun from the police."
So they were running from him. So that's not self-defense at all if they're trying to run away.
They were, yeah, based off of witness testimony. Dell Crawford is in jail awaiting trial in the town of Kalispell, Montana, under charges of deliberate homicide and attempted deliberate homicide, but he is claiming self-defense. We know from our experience that the United States justice system is not fair. We know that Native Americans are grouped with all other minorities in regards to receiving fair treatment in the justice system. I was trying to look for statistics around Native Americans maybe some racial disparities in the justice system, but I couldn't find any specific facts about Native Americans. But we know, like I said, that all minorities are kind of grouped together. Blacks, Latinos, Native Americans, we can all consider them a minority group that does not receive fair justice typically. So I've ran across this project called the Sentencing Project, and it actually is a project that reviews and researches literature over the past 20 years on racial disparities in sentencing and noted the following key findings. So this stuff is stuff that we know, but it's interesting to hear it because this is actually factual based off of the last 20 years. So there's clear evidence of the direct racial discrimination against minority defendants in sentencing outcomes. Evidence of direct discrimination at the federal level is more prominent than at the state level. And that's relevant for Native American cases because we know a lot of those cases make it to the federal level versus state. So whites receive a larger reduction in sentence time than blacks and Latinos for providing substantial assistance to the prosecution. Whites are more likely to hire a private attorney than Latinos or blacks, and therefore receive a less severe sentence. In the vast majority of cases, the race of the victim tends to have an effect on the sentence outcome, while the white victim cases more often result in death sentences. However, in some jurisdictions, notably in the federal system, the race of the defendant also affects sentencing outcomes, with minority defendants more likely to receive a death sentence than white defendants. So I read all of that to tell you, on October 6th, Crawford pled not guilty to all charges, and bail was set at $750,000. Crawford's attorney requested a bail reduction hearing, which occurred on October 19th, requesting that it, quote, be reduced to an amount that the family and friends could help cover.
What? The audacity.
That's ridiculous.
It really is. As a part of this request, Crawford's attorney had multiple people testify to the character of the suspect, having witnesses testify to Crawford's character, past behavior, work habits, and financial means. He was described in this hearing as an upstanding member of the community and someone who had never made threats to another person prior to this incident. In addition to character testimonies from many family members, Crawford's attorney also cited the self-defense claim. Fortunately, the judge presiding over the case denied the bond reduction, stating, "The court does not see what sort of imminent threat Mr. Crawford confronted when he fired the firearm that killed, allegedly, one person and allegedly grievously injured another." So Crawford was remanded back to the custody of Flathead County Sheriff's Office following the hearing. He is due in court for a January 4th pretrial conference.
I guess part of the defense is like, well, he's this upstanding citizen. He's never done anything or whatever. But it's like that you know of, because who gets angry enough in whatever situation just to push a woman over something so small as the golf cart? It sounds like she was just happily taking pictures with her friend.
Well, yeah, you know, they were just having fun. And he could have just said, "Hey, you know, that's my golf cart. Like, please get off of it." Instead of coming up and accusing them of taking his keys, which, you know, I don't know for a fact, but it could have been a racial profiling thing. Like, who are these brown people around my golf cart? I bet they're stealing it. But there are definitely other ways to handle that issue. Clearly, this is a very violent crime, but it sounds like that this family knows the likelihood of this man not receiving proper punishment for his acts.
Especially if he's going to keep pushing this self-defense thing. But I'm glad there are at least witnesses that are sharing exactly what it is they saw, because there's no self-defense if they were running away at all.
I agree.
It's very senseless. It's very senseless to take a life in any capacity, but for it to escalate that fast over her happily taking pictures sitting in the golf cart.
I think it just kind of shows the character of this person.
Yes. Yes. You know, you can talk about how great he was or whatever, but at the same time, like, what did he do?
Well, and then, you know, in the bond hearing, I didn't put this in my case, but in the bond hearing, it actually says that he claims that a group formed around him and there are multiple people trying to beat him up or trying to go after him. And that's how he felt so threatened.
Are we saying that wasn't the case per the witnesses?
Correct. Well, unfortunately, I think that he also had witnesses there with him, as well as Whisper's family that she was there with, too.
So there's two different stories from the witnesses?
Yeah.
They're multiple conflicting stories, which unfortunately will probably only make the case harder in court.
Which is really sad, because at the end of the day, right is right, wrong is wrong. And if the person I was with reacted violently and shot somebody, my inclination wouldn't be to like make up this whole story about what happened.
Exactly. But I mean, just like the Marie Walking Stick Pheasant case, people have a suspect in mind, but they also think that that suspect's family is helping protect them. And I just don't know how you can justify that.
It would eat at my conscience, you know? I just couldn't. You have to be an evil person. You just have to have an evil heart to be that way.
You know, I'm pretty sure it's illegal to be under the influence and to have a concealed carry, but that depends on the state.
Yeah, I just don't feel like alcohol and guns mix. That's just not a smart idea.
No.
Well, clearly it's not, because, I mean, look what happened. And a life was lost very senselessly over something so small. So now 5 kids don't have a mother because somebody decided to act rashly. And so I'm going to be really interested to see how this court case goes in January, just to see how it progresses, especially now that you've mentioned the racial disparities when it comes to sentencing and things like that. This is going to be an interesting one to watch.
Yeah, it will be. And it's going to be one that I'm going to try to follow, because, I mean, he's already pleading not guilty, and it sounds like his lawyer is really adamant that it was a self-defense claim. But the family of Whisper knows that the staggering statistics around the racial disparities in the U.S. justice system, and are continuing to try to keep her story alive so that it's not forgotten and justice is served. So I think what we can do too is just help, you know, bring attention to this story, make sure that people know about it. Because it feels like when people don't know about cases like this, they just kind of fly under the radar. And those are the cases that when justice isn't served, that no one really hears about it.
That's true.
Yeah, true.
So Whisper and her husband were loved and well known in their community as kind and generous people. They actually were known to have a Halloween event at their barn every year. Whisper will be remembered as a sweet, kind, and humble human being who loved being outdoors and going on adventures in the mountains with her family. Whisper loved to have fun, enjoy laughter, and play around with her loved ones. She will be forever remembered as a loving mother, wife, sister, and friend that she was.
Thank you for listening to We Are Resilient. For links to information found for this episode, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at We Are Resilient Podcast, send us an email at weareresilientpod@gmail.com, or visit us at www.war-podcast.com.